Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Ken Seymour, Richard Geiger, heroes of the multiverse.
Red and yellow, red and yellow, red and yellow.
I'm excited. This may not be coming out in the most, let us say, timely of manners, because we've had some other things that we wanted to put up. It's been a couple weeks, but we also wanted to give some time before we did a review of this to let people see it and enjoy all of it.
There's a lot going on. And honestly, we both watched it very early on.
Oh, yeah.
So we could have done this review weeks ago. But you're right. There were things going on. And honestly, there's a lot of really cool things in this movie that if you haven't seen it, I'm sure there's been a thousand different posts about a thousand different things to ruin it for you. So now it's time for us to ruin it via the review that we're going to do.
Well, I don't think we can ruin it at this point. That's the whole point. No ruining. Or at least it's not our fault.
Yes. The internet has already ruined it for folks.
Yeah. Obviously, we're talking about Deadpool and Wolverine, and we are super excited. I mean, this is the only comic book film I've been really amping up for this year.
Well, let's be honest. From a Marvel standpoint, it is the only one this year.
That is true. But, you know, we've got The Crow coming out soon, and we've got some other DC something coming up shortly, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I know. I remember seeing it. There's something, and it's escaping me at the moment. But again, nothing that's really terribly exciting.
Yeah, the writer's strike kind of has pushed a lot of the product back a bit, and 2025 is going to be hopping.
Yes. And, you know, it's a lot of times we can be sad about the fact that we haven't had a lot this year to really look at. But you know what? If it gets those writers paid, I'm behind it.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
So, obviously, as always, we're going to be spoiler heavy, talking about all sorts of things that happen throughout the course of the film. So, if you haven't seen it, you may want to watch it before you listen to this particular episode. But we are going to just tear this down to its core pieces. All sorts of different categories, talking about the cast, the director, the costuming and props, the location, the score, the cinematography, the plot and writing, and any other random bonus points that we decide to put in its favor or take away from the overall score. It can get a score up to 100 points or as low as zero, neither of which have happened, but we've gotten some that have gotten close to the high end and a couple that, well, truthfully, I don't think anything's gotten below 20, so that's actually pretty impressive.
It's in the 40s.
Yeah.
Now, we also normally do a spoiler free review. So
yep.
That one's easy.
Go see it.
Go see it. The end.
It's pretty easy. And this is, no matter how you see it, where you see it. If you miss this film, you are a cinematic idiot.
Whether you watch the X-Men stuff or whether you watch the Marvel stuff, I just think it's you'll miss out on some of the things being delivered and the references, of course, but the movie itself is...
It's just fun.
Very good. Very fun.
All right. So let's start. We have, we've been kind of going all over the place where we start, but I think we're going to go in sequence as I've written them down on the page this time. We're just going to go, ding by ding, line by line.
Let's do it.
So we're going to start with the cast. So... This is the third outing of Deadpool. So we've got a lot of returning people. So, of course, we've got Ryan Reynolds. We've got Marina Baccarin coming back. We've got Rob Delaney coming back from the second film. Leslie Uggams from both the first two films. We get Karen Soni, Dopinder, coming back. Basically, everybody that you saw that was kind of important in the first two films, save... a certain time-traveling cyborg, we get back in this film. Admittedly, maybe not in as much of the film as we would have liked.
Correct. I do believe there... Let's look at the title of it, and those, of course, are going to be the focus of the entire movie. But yes, all those folks that you had mentioned, they do make an appearance, right? And although a lot of them are minor, like we see their face, they, you know, may appear in the background, foreground, say a few words, but still the fact that they've compiled this group of people and kept it consistent, it's impressive.
Yeah, it is extremely impressive. And then the people that they get to kind of round everything out is just amazing. I mean, we get to have, of course, Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine, which is the quintessential Wolverine there. I don't see anybody ever doing the part better.
It depends on how the Wolverine character is going to be delivered in future things, right?
Well, what I mean is there may be somebody that is as good as a Hugh Jackman interpretation, but I don't think anybody will be able to exceed the quality of the Hugh Jackman Wolverine. He defines the character now.
And his dedication to the character,
oh, yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
And that can be something as simple as his workout routine, right?
Right.
It's pretty funny if you look at let's look at the first X-Men movie and you look at this X-Men movie, the difference between the look and what the look was intended to be delivered as in that first movie,
right,
from a body sculpting standpoint,
right,
and in this movie, and it's vastly different.
Yeah,
but he's shredded. So
yeah, he is definitely he had the muscle mass. We get a little bit of Emma Corrin, who is just fantastic. If you're not completely familiar with this very lovely actress, and I mean that by personality, if you've seen any of the interviews with her, she seems like somebody I really would love to just kind of have lunch with. But she's been in a handful of things, not a ton, but if you're familiar with The Crown, I mean, that may be what she's known for the most, possibly A Murder at the End of the World, in both of those extended performances. And she's been great.
Very much so. It's not like she is an unknown.
No.
She just might not be a no.
Comparative to everybody else that's in here.
Exactly.
And of course, they get to bring in, you know, just all of the people that we love. You know, getting Jon Favreau at the beginning of the film, being Happy Hogan, getting Daphne Keene to come back as X-23, just getting Chris Evans to give the whole audience a swerve. See, and that's the thing that amazes me the most about the film. There were there are a lot of ads before the film, and everybody always gets mad because they spoil things. They have some of the jokes, some of the references in there, some of the people. In fact, like the last one showed Daphne Keene, so you knew we were getting X-23.
Yeah, and I had read a bit on why they did that one. She wanted to be with everyone else at the premieres.
Yes.
And, of course, she couldn't do that unless everybody knew that she was going to be in the movie.
Right.
So they were just helping her out, that's all.
But then we still get to have so many surprises. I mean, no idea we would get to see Jennifer Garner or Wesley Snipes or Channing Tatum or Henry Cavill. You know, all of these people that just are just iconic in the amount of work that they've done. And of course I've had a part of this history of comic book films or almost comic book films in some instances.
Yeah. And the thing about some of the other ones we saw, right. We knew Aaron Stanford was going to be there as Pyro, Tyler Mane as Sabretooth, because we saw hints of them in trailers.
Right.
And we didn't know what was going to happen with them, but we saw them. So we knew. But then seeing the faces and the people, that was cool. But then a lot of the pool, like the Deadpool family, right?
Right.
You have masks on, so you don't know that it's them. But you knew that it was them, but you didn't know those things.
Yeah, well, as soon as you listen to the voice, Nathan Fillion's hard to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matthew McConaughey, even though it's brief, it's like, man, I know who that, and that bothered me on my way home. It's like, I know who that. Oh yeah, yeah. I just kind of, it's like, it's crazy. We even got you know, a lot of the secondary characters that showed up were the original people. Now, they didn't get it in every instance. So, like, Juggernaut was not the one guy that was in the previous X films. It was Aaron Reed. But, you know, it's still, they had enough to have the character in there, and they got somebody that could reasonably approximate it.
Yeah, so some of those, like, let's call them background characters, that had some actual screen time. There's just a couple that they couldn't get the people to reprise their roles.
Right. And, well, and some of them did such a great job. Like, they got Daniel Medina Ramos to do Toad. I thought it was the original Toad for a minute. I mean, he did a great job. I mean, now, admittedly, he didn't get a ton of screen time. Sure. He's got a bunch of makeup on, but still very, very funny. So, I mean, it's just, I was just awestruck by the sheer staggering amount of talent they got in this film.
And some of this, I wonder, like, the folks that had the screen time, obviously they got paid, but the folks who made, like, those real brief appearances, everybody's getting paid, but this movie has a budget.
And right.
The idea on this, and Ryan Reynolds himself has explained it, why budgeting matters, is because to stick with the budget means you stick with the ideas and you don't go overboard in certain things, like CGI, for example. So if you're going to work to do things, you're going to work to do those things well the first time and within your budget. So there was only a budget for so many cameos, or they would have had more, because they tried.
Yeah. And it's just, if you get to take a look at it, you look at some of the behind the scenes, there were some very interesting things that were originally going to be part of this film.
Yes.
But even without all that, oh my God, it's, if there is anything that is more of a perfect casting, I don't know it.
I'm trying to think of some things that were just like, oh, that person didn't make sense, or the person that was there wasn't good at doing what we saw, and that just really didn't happen in this movie.
No. I mean, everybody, for the time that they had, did really, really well.
Yes, and I feel like everybody had a good time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody had a good time, so it was easier for them to just, you know, be natural and have fun.
I think so. So for me, out of a score of potential of 20, this casting gets 20.
I, too, did a 20 on this. Now, we may see a trend with this. We may not. but I felt the same way, that it's just top tier.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do better. I don't give a lot of 20s in anything. I maybe it's the critic in me, but it's like, well, if it's the best, it better be the best. I just have to keep reminding myself, no, how does it make you feel? How's ultimately, that's the thing. And the cast on this makes me feel happy, that there is nothing. Adding more might have made more happy, but didn't need to. I was optimally happy.
Yeah, that's kind of the secret, when you're smiling the whole time and then you are happy at the end, and your brain's firing away like, did we see this? Like, what did we see with this? Who is this? Like, you're trying to just piece together all the parts that you just saw.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, director. Sean Levy at the head of things again, which is not terribly surprising, because he's been at the head of a number of Ryan Reynolds projects over the years. So why wouldn't he be at the head of this one?
Yeah, we were chatting before. One of the more recent ones he's done was Free Guy. And Free Guy is basically Ryan Reynolds in a computer world, like a game world, right? So he's like living the game in real life as that character, effectively. And that's a bad description of it. It's a fun movie. It's actually a really good movie.
It's really good.
It's got a lot of guests in it, including one Mr. Chris Evans. But if you've watched that one and you played games at all, you understood the direction that that movie was going. And that's a fun movie.
The Adam Project, another Ryan Reynolds helmed thing. That was a lot. Actually had some emotion to it, some fun. It was good stuff. That show, I Am Not Okay With This, that just received massive positive vibes. I mean, he was a producer on that. Just look at all of those things. They gave him, let's say, 8 episodes of Stranger Things.
And then a handful of other series and movies, right? So it's not like he's doing one or the other. He's done a little bit of both. We got some real steel in there. So like Hugh Jackman was in that one, right?
Night at the Museum. That was a great, great kind of family movie. The famous Jet Jackson TV series. I'm not familiar with that one.
No.
I must admit, that one I'm not a real... Oh, it's a Disney thing. That's why. Okay.
So he's already got the Disney background. Perfect.
That connection. He knows where it is. But so, I mean, he's got the chops. So you know he can direct. He's done a lot of good stuff, and he continues his streak with this film. You take somebody that already knows Ryan Reynolds very well, knows what he's capable of, knows how he reacts, knows the medium, knows the character. I mean, I think a lot of Sean Levy's job in this film is just kind of let things happen.
Let things happen, but make sure that those things that do happen are appropriately paced and placed. And I've got to imagine that sometimes the brain parts for these folks go a million miles per hour. So sometimes it's the director's, the director's responsibility to rein that in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of big heads, not big heads. Like that's not exactly, big heads means like, oh, I got an ego. Like when I say big heads, I mean like there's important, famous, like top tier people spread all throughout this. Right. And it's a Disney project. So there's always the weight of the Disney movie because this is the first of the, quote, X-Men movies now being on Disney. This is an R-rated film on Disney.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure to have this be delivered from so many different angles. And, of course, a big portion of that is on the director. And obviously... did a pretty good job, we're talking like the pace of it's good, the story has its own things which we'll talk about later, but I feel like there are times when there's storytelling, there's action, there's the reminiscing, if we will, and then back to storytelling, back to emotion, and this story kind of had that, but you have to be able to deliver that appropriately,
right?
And I think we got it.
And so, I mean, we kind of put editing in with the directing side.
Yep.
And towards the end, there's a couple of what I felt were some bad transitions, a couple of editing mistakes. But that's it. I mean, it's just kind of, otherwise it's just really, really solid.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of hiccups
in
this one. Everything seems in place. That's hard to say on a lot of movies.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. So nearly perfect. I have to give him props. Out of 15, I'm going to give this gentleman a 14 of 15.
Let me do the calculations here. 14 is what I have as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's continue into another category where that's worth even fewer points. Costuming
and
props is very important. In a comic book film, costuming is especially important because you have this absurd challenge of we need to make it comics accurate without being comics accurate because it has to represent on the screen. And some things are already tested. They already know how the Deadpool outfit's going to look. They know it's going to look good. They already know how Colossus is going to look. They already know how Negasonic is going to look. They've gotten those costumes down, and for the people that they're bringing in, I mean, it's like Wolverine. You think, oh, Wolverine is Wolverine. It's like, yeah, but what are you going to do to make it different?
An all-black leather suit?
No.
No. I think of all the costume props, and we can touch on so many of them. The big one that everybody wanted was the actual accurate description, uniform, color.
Yes.
Like all the above. And the mask.
And the mask. And I didn't think we were going to get the mask. I mean, I saw the outfit, so it's like, well, okay, that's good enough, because it looked great. But then when they pulled out the mask and it looked as good as it did, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. They just freaking nailed the Canadian Wolverine outfit.
Well, the other thing that we saw as the story progressed early on in searching for the Wolverine, right? We got to see other versions, other variants in different at different costumes, different positions. Like, so yeah, we got to see, you know, like
the actual correct height Wolverine.
Yes, with a V-neck T-shirt. Yeah.
Oh man.
So, besides the fact that they got we got to view the entire movie of a much more of what we would always anticipate or what we would expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see the other little variants as well. Like the when he was the brown.
Oh yeah.
When he was, you know.
You got the apocalypse world kind of style. You got all sorts of variants of just some major instances throughout the history of Wolverine. You get to see some of the costumes for that. But not just that, you get the updated version of like the Blade costume, because they did a little work on that. It's there. It's the
there.
Original,
mm-hmm.
But it's still just adjusted a smidge because Wesley Snipes is not 30 anymore.
And he even talked about he like, I get to do this role. Okay, well, if I'm going to do the role, I've got to represent. So he hit the weights. He went back to the gym to get himself in shape to be able to play it. Did he look all beefy like he did, you know, a long day ago? No, but
he looked good.
He looked good. I liked how they had the little, you know, like the goatee was the white,
right?
Know, white gray, the little highlights in the hair. Like, great, perfect, excellent. But we had other ones too, right? So we talked about the Juggernaut costume, but it's the Juggernaut from
the X-Men films.
X3.
Yeah, the truly awful Juggernaut costume.
Yes, like it's not good at all. We saw the potential of what a good Juggernaut could look like in the second Deadpool. So obviously it's not like they're just ignoring that one because they've already given us that representation of it. This was a callback to those other movies, and it looked great too, just because of great.
It's what it was.
Of what it was, yes.
Yeah, no, in this instance, having bad costumes, so long as they were the bad costumes from the original films, was the exact right move.
Yes, exactly. Like, don't mess with it. Bring in the foolishness from before,
right,
and just put it in here because everybody knows it's foolish. If you change it, that's foolish, right?
And getting to see Johnny Storm's outfit, you know, the whole flames thing, that was great. The only outfit that just looked totally absurd, but needed to look totally absurd, was Gambit.
Absolutely. The headpiece was exactly what the headpiece looks like, and it looked silly.
Yes, it did.
But when we talk about comic book accurate.
It is 100% accurate.
Like, look at it. And then the chest piece being all purple and the cape. And
yeah.
But did I miss? I thought he had like the gloves with.
He did. It's not all no fingers. Some had fingers, some don't. That was one of my favorite Pete Holmes jokes when they were doing Professor X firing the X-Men. And
yeah.
And he fires Gambit. It's like, choose one. It's either fingers or no fingers.
Exactly. But I was looking for them, and maybe I just was too busy looking at the rest of the costume, but I was like, did I miss them?
No, it was there.
Gloves? Yeah, so
it was there.
And even obviously he had the cards, and his whole game on that is, you know, flinging the charged cards, but those looked solid,
yeah.
Right? I know that's more CGI in this instance, but still
counts.
It still counts because it is a prop for that character.
Not right. Customer. yeah, no customers. No customers.
Nope, just a prop. Nope. And he had a staff too. He's able to charge that from time to time. So that's maybe a storytelling and choreography thing.
Right.
But the character was represented like appropriately.
Everybody looked fantastic. And all the props from the TVA, the little batons that they used to weed people, to prune them, as it were. Just every single piece that they used was fantastic.
And even go back to we only saw like the Sabretooth character briefly.
Yeah. But he looked exactly like he did from the original X-Men film.
Yep. Pyro was a little scummy and dirty, but he's been in that world forever.
Right.
But he still had his comic book look, which was the orange suit. So right. Like, bravo, very good.
There's no ending of positive things to say. All of the little, the hideout that X-23 and the rest of them had, there was so much in there. I need to go back and watch it again because I was constantly like, I want to pay attention to what they're doing, but I'm constantly looking around because there's just little bits and pieces that there's a lot of detail everywhere.
Even the little things, I forget when it was, they showed maybe he, gosh, did he... Then they're in the desert in the land, or like he fell off something, and there was a comic laying off to the side, just kind of on but off camera. Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's a little sneaky. That's sneaky there.
It's amusing. That's the series that I have most of. Not the original, but the one that they referenced anyway. Just fantastic. Another instance where they nailed it. 10 out of 10.
I did 10 as well.
Yeah. So, obviously, dear listener, this seems to be going quite well. Let's see if it continues. Is it going to be more of a love fest when we talk about location going from point A to point B? Did they give us plenty of things to work with and places to be and to see? Yeah. Yeah, they did.
And even within the void, when we saw the void in the Loki series, right? We kind of saw it as a desolate region, and this was still desolate, but there was more liveliness to it, right? It had zones, it appeared, right?
Yeah.
So you got a little more plant life, a little bit more vibrant in the void. The only thing that we kind of commented on that maybe wasn't as top-notch as some of the other ones was the actual town, city, block, corner scape, right?
Right. It's pretty generic.
Definitely looked like a movie set, and that's fine.
Only there for a minute or two.
But when you went to the TVA, that looked like it did before. When he was in his apartment, it looked like an apartment. It was always crowded. It was because it was a small apartment, right?
Right.
CarMax. like CarMax, right? So all of those things just fit. It was amusing. And then, of course, we already talked about him going from place to place looking for a Deadpool. But when he was in those places looked good.
Yeah. I mean, the callbacks to the Loki series were dead on. The callbacks to the previous films were dead on, and all the new stuff was really good, too. So, I mean, again, we don't need to spend too much time on this, but
no.
I'd say a 9 out of 10 on locations.
You said 9?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll do a 9.
We got to get out of this. I'm going to let you go first on the next one. All right. Let's talk about the score. All of the musics that appeared and... Talk about a ridiculous soundtrack.
Well, the big sequence that everybody kind of talked about is the whole NSYNC kind of credits opening.
It was great.
It was very good. Very, very good, right? So what a great way to roll the credits but still tell a cheesy little story and be silly at the same time, right? TVA's out to get him. Well, he's just going to mow everybody down and dance at the same time. It's great.
Yeah, and get a little, this is how we do it.
A lot of callbacks. So, like, there's a lot of older music in this. But there was definitely a mix because there's a couple newer things thrown in there as well.
Yeah, it's pretty excellent. And normally I wouldn't want a real hard focus on like a Madonna song on any film that I ever want. It's not that I don't like her music. I actually really do, but I don't like it in soundtracks usually. But yeah, it kind of worked.
Yeah.
It's hard not to love it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's just, if you look at all the songs from the soundtrack, there's definitely older ones and then less older ones, but all these songs are like very recognizable songs. And if you watch some of the other Marvel movies, right? Some of the highlights of some of those other Marvel movies is putting good music in the good places at the appropriate time.
Yeah.
And this does that and more, right? Yep.
Bring them out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I love it. And then when it comes to the actual orchestral part of it, again, we always talk about, does it bring something to the scene? Does it play too loud at points where it kind of distracts you from what's going on? Or does it play in the background enough to where it's where it needs to be? And there's no point in this film where I go, man, that music is really annoying the crap out of me.
Yeah, it's hard when you have a 2-hour long movie and then you have 15 songs that are going to be played for, 30 seconds, a minute. Well, the NSYNC was played longer than that. But most of these, you get hints of the song. So now you got to fill the void with, hour of music where 30 minutes maybe is, there's no music. It's just you have this dialogue, right? And you don't need music. You got to fill that in with something, man. And the people that compose this stuff, I don't know how they do it, but it's just like it's very good, and it's something like you said that is not distracting and actually builds a proper mood and tempo.
Yeah. So, what would you give this out of a 10?
You know, I was thinking because the song selection is very good, I'm gonna go with a 9.
Okay, that's what I chose too. I also had a 9. Maybe next time we'll have a different score.
Maybe.
All right. Well, let's try cinematography. And as a reminder, this is not just, camera placement and blocking. And this is where all of the CGI stuff lives and breathes.
In an action movie,
right.
Maybe the choreography that goes along with it as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And, man, the choreography was good.
Now you can cheat a little bit in Deadpool because you can put somebody behind the mask, right? Doesn't have to be Ryan Reynolds, and that person can be more trained on those types of things. But whatever we saw on screen in terms of that fighting or those maneuvers or the athleticism. For sure, we saw Hugh Jackman. I mean,
yeah, no doubt about it.
There was a little CGI that was a little weak at the end that was not Hugh Jackman. But for the most part, what we saw from him was him doing the work.
Yeah.
And whether it was from actually being good at it, whether it was good from clever cuts, I didn't see anything that was really out of place. Like you just trim this away to hide up the, the discrepancies. Like, no, I didn't see that.
Where you get the actor that really hasn't put any effort into becoming more fit and they have to be in some big chase scene. So you do a lot of cuts to try and hide the fact that they're not where they need to be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we saw multiple Deadpool against people, right?
Right.
We saw multiple Deadpool Wolverines. We saw the battle in the void, which was all the collective, quote, heroes against the bad guys. And you can, if you watch Endgame, for example.
They did the distance cheat thing.
Yes. One of my favorite things is just to, when all the dialogue is going on in the final battle at Endgame, just watch the bit actors in the back just like casually just like slinging a spell. And like, it's really funny because you're not supposed to be paying attention to them. But when you've seen it enough, it's just so distracting because it's just like, woo, woo, you know, there's no effort put into it whatsoever. And I'm sure after I watch this again, I will see more of that in the background. But what we got in the foreground was very good stuff. So, like, if you're going to have the Elektra character, you know, Jennifer Garner was...
She tried hard.
Like, great. Top-notch. Very good. From what we could get from Wesley Snipes, great, right?
Yep.
The Channing Tatum gambit, him, like... jumping around,
he did good
flinging cards, like, so because this is a comic book and that character has some absurdity to it, put the absurdity in there, but just don't make it look dumb, right? Like, make it look practiced. And there are behind the scenes things, there are things of him training to do this. I mean, he wanted to do it already, but the fact that he actually did the moves and was practicing, like, it came across on screen as authentic to me.
Yeah, that's everything in terms of that looked good. The CGI was nearly flawless throughout the entire film. I mean, like you're saying, there's some weak spots here and there. I think the only real weak spot I saw, or the weakest spot I saw, was towards the end where they were doing some close up on the faces for Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. The quality of the video, like, dropped on a couple of those shots. They're real short, but you looked at them and they stuck out like a sore thumb compared to all the really high quality stuff that was right around them. And that was a little weird to me. I couldn't figure that one out, but if that's all.
Yeah, exactly. So the nice thing about how Ryan Reynolds explained this in previous ones is, like he said, there is a budget. Stick to the budget. It makes your work better instead of just throwing money into CGI. So you got to do the stuff well. Well, that might mean more practical effects. Use the CGI where you need to. And, of course, a lot of, you know, people getting chopped up and knives going through and blood splatter, that's going to be some CGI stuff. But that's not as big as, like, trying to do a whole sequence for 50 minutes of people doing stuff, right? So what we saw with that was, you know, even big characters like the creature in the void.
Oh, yeah.
That still looked good.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like.
I feel like they had leftover bits from the Loki television show that they could use.
it's great in a certain sense because you can look at this movie. And as we're recording this, it's already hit $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what the budget was for this movie.
It wasn't $1 billion.
But it these movies have never had a $300 million budget, right? That's just not it. And clearly you can make a very good movie with fun stuff with CGI and not break the bank. And I just feel like they kept saying, like, they've come to save the day. Like, X-Men have come to save the day in this. And it's possible, but this just tells us, put a good people, good director, good ideas in place, and you can do it. You can do it, and you don't have to do it all CGI'd up and have hundreds of millions of dollars in the budget.
Lots of good blood spattering, lots of good just gnarly effects, and it's violent, but it's cartoony violence, so it doesn't feel really. I mean,
yeah,
using bones as nunchucks. I mean, that's Looney Tunes if I've ever seen anything like it. Just a little darker Looney Tunes,
and you have that availability in this one because of their, you know, healing factor to just stab the heck out of each other and have it be.
It's fine.
Inconsequential, right? Just because nothing's going to come of it.
My life is quite inconsequential.
I need to watch this again.
So, yeah. Out of 15, what would you give it?
We can't do perfect all the time. No. So 13.
Me too. All right. We've got one more category. This is usually the make or break portion of the program. We're going to talk about plot and writing. So if this movie had a weak spot, this is it.
Sure. This is where the weak spots always fall in every movie review that we do. And we're critical on certain things, and we want a story to be congruent. But when we look at this story, and if this is the weak spot, oh, man, okay.
It's not much of a weak spot.
There's a lot of the Marvel movies have a MacGuffin of some sort.
Oh, yeah.
And the MacGuffin in this one was Wolverine, right?
Well, kind of. It was the machine that the evil Mr. Paradox was building.
Oh, yes. It turned into be the machine. But the whole concept of this movie is we're introducing a new facet, a new idea in the Marvel universe, which is an anchor character.
Right.
How much that stretches going forward, I don't know. Maybe it has importance.
It's been used in the past, both on Marvel and DC sides, but I don't think they'll do too much with it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because if they're going to get into places where it's this universe and this universe and this universe, I'm sure they'll touch on it in a certain sense. Is this going to be a major plot point in the future?
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it a cheesy way to get between the X-Men universe and the Avengers universe? Kind of, you know.
But that's okay.
You got to find a commonality, and the Void just happens to be that commonality, I guess.
Well, it gives you an excuse to go, because I know that's got to be the writing thing. It's like, okay, we want to get all of these people in the same place at the same time. How and why would that happen? Well, that's a perfectly valid reason based on pre-existing lore. It's a solid reasoning.
Yeah. Now, based on this, there's thousands of different universes or infinite universes, but in terms of what's been numbered, it's 1,000-something, right? In this universe. So it's very feasible that when we see this blade, right, that blade is not the blade that we saw from the blade before, but a blade from a similar universe. You know, part of what wasn't explained is why are they there? Like, we know why they're there, but why are they there, right?
And not the others.
And that doesn't need to be explained.
No.
It's kind of a throwaway detail, but it's interesting, at least, like, why is that blade there? Is the blade in 972 the same as the blade that's in 100? You know, like, we know in comic books that's not the case, but do they act the same? They look the same? They smell the same? Like, that's too many details.
There's only so much you can do. So I focus instead, because we knew the plot wasn't going to be deep on this. The plot is fairly simple, because you know what? It's the same plot as the first two films. It's almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh, the thing I love is in danger. I got to go do this thing to make sure they're safe.
Got to save them. We didn't even mention Peter. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we mentioned his actor's name. That's about as far
that's true. You know, that even that became a silly little plot aspect at the end. It's interesting, all these little pieces that they tie together in certain areas, but then they reference previous things. So that all tied into the plot without really needing a heavy explanation.
No.
And that's okay.
And that works. But, I mean, if there were some weaknesses in terms of this, I would have liked to have seen a slightly different start. Like I said, I'd like them to break the mold a little bit, at least to get the ball rolling. The dialogue was on point. They even had a chance to have some, you know, obviously they got the snarky comebacks and the witty back and forth, but they had some actual genuine, you know, emotional gushy stuff too.
Yeah, in the van when they're chopping each other up, and you know, the Wolverine character, it just had it and gives it to him for a good minute's worth of yelling and telling him how worthless he is, right? So there were definitely meaningful spots, and there was a time sitting by the campfire with X-23, Laura.
Making a little connection that he didn't have.
Yeah, so they had the spots in it, and I know we're in Avengers world, and I get it, but the X-Men are just better. Sorry, okay, that has nothing to do with this. But like,
what, it's okay, you can be wrong.
But what we're trying to do is, how are we getting the X-Men world into the world with everyone else without heavy hand forcing it? And I think this is a good start. It's a good start.
Now, just being the comic book nerd that I am, one mistake that they made that kind of annoyed me was the confrontation between the Human Torch and Pyro. And
yeah, that's when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's convenient, right? Yeah.
Well, convenient is fine, and I know they needed something like that for the plot to move forward, but in terms of just absolute power level, the Human Torch is way more powerful than Pyro is, and he could absorb as much as he wanted to, and he'd just be able to keep dishing it back out to him because he creates it, and he can just keep creating it. And they've had multiple examples of it. Dude in the comics fried an entire Negative Zone army. I mean, like held the gates like Lord of the Rings style. It was just crazy. And you know, they've had a bunch of other examples like that too. And Pyro's most impressive feat is he doesn't really have one.
He just burns stuff.
Right.
Is it, can Pyro create fire?
That's why he's got the lighter.
He can manipulate it.
He just can't create it. Whereas the Human Torch can create and manipulate. And so, yeah, it shouldn't even be close.
Well, hey, we're playing with different universes here, so maybe that Human Torch character didn't have the same power level that other ones.
That's where I was going with it. Saying, okay, there's a million Human Torches. I was able to step back after my initial geek roar ended. It's like, no.
When I saw that, and I'm not the same, especially when it comes to Fantastic Four, like I'm not the same type of comic book person at all. But I had to like raise an eyebrow, okay, it played to the, let's play the game. It played to the game. Cool.
Yeah, and so that was a bit of an issue. The bad guy getting a hold of the other bad guy's MacGuffin there's a lot of convenience at the very end. Just the things fell into place a little too easily. But it's a comic book film. So that's kind of almost always going to happen to a certain extent.
And the other thing too, and I always wonder in this, it's kind of like when you have Superman in a DC thing, Superman is basically unstoppable. So how do you stop the unstoppable? You make that character not do the unstoppable. So like in this world, in this movie, the Cassandra Nova character could quite literally do anything she wanted to any of those people.
Which is actually fairly comic book accurate.
And that's what I'm going to understand is that she's Xavier, but
more.
And so she could have done whatever, whenever to whomever she wanted to, but just didn't.
Yeah. So, right.
Okay. You know, but that played to the storyline, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, so going into this, I can put up with the normal stuff that you see in a comic book film. I can put up with the fact that the plot is going to be a little thin, and it was. So long as, do we have good dialogue? Yes. Do we have actual character growth? Yeah. We get character growth. It's like, all right. I'm good.
And that's what Vanessa wanted.
Yeah.
Right? So we got that. Yep.
That was one of the other kind of weaknesses, too. They're the one scenes where he's trying to fit in as a car salesman, and they're back and forth with Vanessa, and he's having problems. Like, yeah, that was a little forced. That wasn't very good.
Well, because they didn't give, remember, we talked about, they didn't give us the story of what has happened, so they had to kind of force feed us something.
Well, it's not just that it was force fed. That was bad enough, but just, it was clunky. The actual dialogue and that little bit was just kind of clunky. It wasn't great because they needed to get him from here to here, and it just felt like he beats himself up and doesn't accept it. Even though they've already been through this other stuff and they know that it wouldn't actually work out that way in their discussions and in the way they talk, but they have to make it that way. And it just almost looks like in their performance, it's like, yeah, they both know this is not how this would happen.
Mm-mm, no. And the fact that that character is, you know, we know he used the time thing, the watch.
Right.
Right. To go back and tweak fix a few things. Which apparently was okay. That wasn't the issue.
That was great. That was one of my favorite bits. Like, no, that's fine.
Okay. Like, it was like they touched on it, right?
Right.
But okay, maybe that caused Shatterstar to be alive too. Because why is Shatterstar there?
Yeah,
got chopped to bits. A little weird. Yeah. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe he brought Shatterstar back from before he got chopped up. Also not explained. But anyway. We're being picky, right? Because when you watch these things, your brain, my brain picks. Why would we pick out those non-essential things? Who knows? It's just the way our brain works, right?
And also because most of the other stuff was fine.
Correct. And it's not like we're looking for bad stuff.
No.
It's just you hear or see a thing and it just seems off. But if it was really off, it's so distracting that you keep thinking about it. But in this one, it's like that didn't happen.
No.
You saw it, you recognized it, and you forgot about it.
Yeah. So, you know, all in all, out of a 20, you know, it does what a lot of the films are going to do. It gets there. It's not perfect, but it gets there. You know, I give 15 out of 20 for this one.
We have a different number. I did 16 for plot writing.
16? That's entirely wrong. All right. We have one more thing. We got bonus points to give or take away. And I have none because I kind of talked about everything that I loved and I don't feel I need to change the point total I got to. It's where it needs to be.
And I didn't feel like I needed to manipulate anything either. It's just that, like I said, the X-Men, they really are better than the Avengers.
Not even close.
And we got a live action, an actual live action Gambit with the cheesy dialogue and the over the top.
The awful accent.
All of it, and the charged cards, and the things that we possibly could have gotten 4 years ago had it just worked out. But it shows that X-Men universe, one of the best things I've seen the entire year has been X-Men 97.
That was fun.
So to have that character and see that, like, we can do it. We can do the X-Men character. Like, we could bring the whole X-Men, do the uncanny X-Men, bring them all, right? Like, let's do this. And it just gives me hope for the future iterations of whatever we're going to see.
Right. So you're given a point then?
1 point.
One point's
fair. Yep.
I almost gave a point for the just foul-mouthed diatribe and the cutscene from Chris Evans is like, oh, that's so excellent.
Very good. And they played it off because I guarantee you everybody that watched that movie without seeing that end credits was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. Throwing him under the bus like that, it's perfect. Like that's this character. Like, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they swoop the skin off of him and they're like, ooh. didn't expect that. He did. And then at the very end, it's just like, it's like, see, look, like I didn't, I was just telling the truth. Like it was very funny.
Yeah, that was so good. All right. So that brings us to our final scores. I have a gentleman's 90. Well, Mr. Richard Geiger has a 92.
92. We didn't even talk about the Cavalrine. Oh, my gosh.
There's so much. That's the thing. It's just packed to the gills. I wanted to talk a little bit about Wonmi Mosaku as B-15 coming back from the Loki series.
The Loki series, yep. Made a brief appearance.
Her little back and forth between Peter. It was so awkward and awesome at the same time.
At the same time.
It's just like, man.
Consistency. Carry the stuff across. Have the actors be there the whole time. That's where you get the success from.
Yeah, it is, definitely. What did you think, dear listener? Did you find this film as fun as we did? Did we miss anything super important? Let us know. You know where to find us. We're on all those social media things that you youngins love.
With a passion.
Okay, we're not on all of them. We're on a bunch of them. But, yeah, just let us know. We'll always respond. Well, we'll probably respond. At least
Try to respond.
You know, if we can figure out how to work the thing. Where's the buttons? But
you young whippersnappers.
But next week we're coming back with another interview. We will have actress Charlotte Kirk join us talking about some of her new projects and things that are going on. I tell you what, it is a good time to be a pudding person. We've got so much good stuff coming.